Hey, everybody, welcome to Bulwark Takes. I'm Tim Miller. We've got a fun one for you here. He is the director of Big Data Poll, host of Inside the Numbers with the People's Pundit, and author of a forthcoming book, Burn It Down, What the Polls Say Young Americans Really Want. It's Rich Barris. And Rich, I need to, you know, you're on a lib show now, so we're going to have to do a trigger warning, okay? We got to do a trigger warning. Rich, is it MAGA? Kind of a, you're like a MAGA true believer, like a pure MAGA, not like one of those Republicans that's pretending to be MAGA.
I think that's somewhat fair. You know, yeah. I think it would be fair to count. And by the way, thank you for having me on, Tim. I'm looking forward to this.
Actually, and back really at you, it's hard for me to get MAGAs to come on. So I appreciate you and doing that, it genuinely.
That's sad. You know, I was saying before, you know, that I am old enough to remember when we used to talk to each other. I'm going to be 45. I'm not a big fan of the environment where we suddenly don't. But I think it's fair to say that as a pollster, people changed my views over the years. So I think I got a little bit more defensive. You know, I think that's totally fair to say of the people that we interview and the people that came to even get me to remember what side of the tracks I came from.
Yeah. Well, you, as part of your work, you correctly forecast that Trump would get 306 electoral votes in 2016. 2024, your state polling projected Trump would win with 312 electoral votes. PTSD for most of our viewers on that, but those two things did come to pass. At this time, I DM'd you because you're bearish. I've got bearish Barris was my headline for this on the MAGA chances and Republican chances. What do you assess is different that's happening this time versus 16 and 24 where you thought Republicans were going to do well?
Look, and I know that MAGA's going to hate me saying this, but what MAGA has become, or the issues that they're championing, Tim, are not the issues that delivered those Electoral College wins to President Trump. And I think if we're having an honest discussion, you know, you could be a supporter of the president and you can still be honest, or, you know, I don't see what sycophancy, how that helps anybody. I mean, ultimately it's my job to convey what people are telling me, and they wanted the old Trump back. You know, Trump 1.0 was really volatile as far as the media cycle, and there was a lot of boat rocking going on. Some of it was his fault. Some of it wasn't. You know, I mean, he met with a lot of pushback.
Mostly his fault.
A lot of it, the Twitter accounts, right? People said back then that, you know, I like what he's doing. I just wish he wouldn't be on Twitter. By the time we get to 24, I think so much has happened with the COVID lockdowns, which even though they started under him, he became a quick critic of it. And then in the Biden administration, what had transpired, Trump was big on anti-war. You know, he was always trying to meet with Putin and settle things and kind of tone down Russophobia, if you want to call it, and that, you know, whatever you want to call it in this country. And I don't want to say normalize relations with Russia, but certainly try to do what even Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama did with the big reset button during the Obama administration. At the time, it wasn't as appreciated. And then by the time we get to 24, it really did, you know, come to pass. It's just people felt like, you know what? I think we might have had it a little bit better than we thought. Can we go back and have a redo? But this administration has not been a redo of 1.0 in many ways.
Yeah, let's talk about those ways, because I think maybe the way you assess it is different from, you know, what you might hear on this channel most often. So, like, what are the ways in which you think he has either betrayed or strayed from, you know, kind of his campaign promises in 16?
Well, I think a lot of this is about optics, which is why we started the White House Focus Tracker and the poll that we do, we release every month, because it just came from an idea of what people were telling us during the interviews. And a common theme that just kept coming up over and over again, and you could see it if you don't read the transcripts, the interviews, you can see in the word clouds clear as day. They thought that the first Trump administration was much more focused on domestic policy, and Americans aren't, you know, they're not stupid. They know that the president's job has a lot.
It's in the name. They're America first, you know, it's right there in the name.
Look, I mean, I feel like I have a hard time speaking to some people on the right who are being intellectually dishonest with themselves. I mean, it's in the name, guys. I mean, you can go and bring up an Oprah interview from the 1980s when I was probably five, and most of those millennial men who switched and voted for Donald Trump in 24, and they really propelled him in many ways. They might not even remember that interview when he said, I would be tougher with Iran, or some obscure thing about Iran not being able to have a nuclear weapon. This is a man, this is a candidate and two-time president who undecided. This is really not disputable. He ran against no new wars in the Middle East. And I think the first 3 to 5 months, and our polling showed it, the first 3 to 5 months, he was riding high and people loved what he was doing, especially younger people, which is what the book is all about. Republicans are going to run out of a coalition soon if they don't build on what he started to build in 24. And a lot of those gains are squandered because of the direction they took, Tim. I mean, they decided by spring, certainly by summer, before Charlie was killed, to conduct Operation Midnight Hammer. And that was kind of like a PTSD moment for a huge part of Trump's coalition. And they just thought, here we go again. No, please. And they gave him a lot of grace, and they waited and waited and waited, but he never took that pivot back to the domestic. There's been no manufacturing tours the way we saw in the first Trump administration. It just seemed like he was able to juggle the two in the first administration differently, and he's been consumed by foreign policy since Operation Midnight Hammer.
I mean, literally just today, right before we started this interview, Trump sent out a bleat. That's what I call the Truth Social posts. I can't call them truths. So, you know, he sent out a bleat saying maybe we should rename it the Strait of Trump. And it's like, this is one of these things where, I don't know, man, you tell me, but it feels to me like if in 2019, 2018, he had done one of his like kind of cheeky, trolly Trump things about some foreign country and how we're going to rename it after America, a lot of the base would have laughed and said that's a troll. But like in this context, it's like Strait of Trump. Like, what are you talking about? Like, why do you care so much about that? How did you like the Strait of everything was fine until you started this war?
I don't think you would mind me saying, I just showed the chairman in Bucks a response, the transcript response from a 30-year-old male that we interviewed in Bucks County. This is a low propensity voter, but this is exactly the kind of guy. He's the reason Donald Trump won Bucks, won Northampton. You know, they're a little bit different, obviously, demographically in Erie County, but so many areas where he did better than the Senate candidate did, and McCormick, you know, he won. He ultimately pulled it off, but it was kind of for Pennsylvania for a Republican. It was kind of a comfortable win for Donald Trump. And this is the guy who did it. And Tim, it was during the time when, do you remember when he sent out, and they wound up taking it down, but he sent out the Truth post about everyone thought he claimed he was like, he didn't know. It was, I thought it was a doctor and I was helping people. Do you remember that post?
Yeah.
And
sure.
It became where clearly he was equating himself to the Messiah. That gentleman just basically said, very calm, very collected. He said, you know, I'm just over this. It was cute at one point. It was cute and funny when I thought he was doing something for me and I thought he cared still. It's not cute anymore. And that's really what it comes down to. When you're helping people, or people at least think that you care about their needs and you're addressing their needs, then they'll tolerate a lot. But when, you know, they feel like you've kind of gone off on, you know, the wrong side of the path here, it's just not cute anymore. It gets old.
Yeah. You did one tweet I noticed about the betrayal of the base. I want to kind of run through the map here in a second, but on an issue that, let's just say people wouldn't have counted this on the list among, you know, my friends when I'm on Nicole Wallace's show. But it's interesting to hear the perspective of people from the base. And one of the you might not use the word betrayal. One of the things that you talked about how people were let down about is that, you know, you have Milo getting detained this week. You have the Tate brothers getting detained, but not Fauci. And I do wonder, like, where, like, how the kind of base feels about that stuff. Like, it's not just kind of the big policy issues where kind of MAGA voters and Democratic voters aren't happy with the war. But, like, there are some particular issues where, like, the MAGA voters wanted follow through on that he's not doing. Could you just talk about those kind of MAGA world